Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Technology Leaders.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Technology Leaders, and we are joined today with the underwriter of the show, the Band of Coders.
Well, we are absolutely blessed to have the Band of Coders underwriting this show, and we have Bobby John with us today, but we didn't mic him up. He's back there in the background keeping a keen eye on the proceedings here. But I'm just so glad that we made it back to the studio because you and I, we've been bouncing around quite a bit this week. We did the remote earlier in the week for GMSDC, and then we were out at the Gwinnett studio a little while ago, and tell them what Karen has in store for us tomorrow.
That's right. We're going north, south, east, west, wherever they'll have us.
Well, they're going to have us right here for right now, and I do think this is going to be a fantastic segment. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with the co-founder of Tix Same Day, Mr. Paul Lazon, and we're also going to catch up with the co-founder of a company called Project Locker, Mr. Corrigan Brown. But first up on Atlanta Technology Leaders today, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the founder of the Digital Marketing Guy.
Please, I think it's actually the digital. It's not just the founder. This is the guy.
He's it. You're the whole thing?
The whole shebang.
Well, we'll find out. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Mr. Matthew Bivens. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you guys so much. Pleasure to be here.
So tell us a little bit about digital marketing and why we need a guy. Everybody needs a guy, right?
I think so. I mean, everybody, definitely. Digital marketing is a field that I'm a big fan of. I've been in the digital marketing industry working for the past about 4 years, and I think the reason why you need a guy is because it's an industry that's always changing. I mean, the guys sitting across from me, they're in a similar space, and you can see that every month it seems that there's new developments and new things coming out, and it's difficult to stay on top of everything. So that's really where I come in.
Now, did you start out as the analog marketing guy and you worked your way up to digital, or you just went right in at digital?
I dove headfirst into digital.
So what makes the digital world different than maybe the offline world?
Oh, man. I mean, there's a lot of different things that are a lot of different moving parts. Like I said, you know, things are always changing. And one of the biggest ones is just the internet. The internet's new. It's still kind of just getting out of its infancy. So people are still trying to figure out how it works and how to make it work for their business. So having somebody like myself who is on top of the different changes can really benefit businesses who are, you know, business owners who really just want to focus on their craft. They might be great at what they do, but they're not necessarily marketers. And so that's where people like myself come in.
So where are these folks hurting? Where are their pain points, I guess is a good way to say it.
You know, I see a lot of different pain points with my clients and the people who I talk with. They might say that they're suffering from a lack of exposure online. I don't have enough leads. I don't have enough quality leads. But really, when I start digging down, what we get down to is most of the time they don't have a solid marketing strategy. They don't have a process for how they're going through their marketing. It's just kind of, let's throw a bunch of stuff at the wall, see what sticks, and hope that it'll stick again once we throw it the second time. So, you know, again, all sorts of different pain points, but it really boils down to strategy from what I see mostly.
So a lot of times they're just reacting to some new development, like maybe there's a new social media channel that pops up there and they're like, oh, I got to get on that. You know, like
exactly.
I got to be on Pinterest. My kid's on Pinterest, so I should be on Pinterest.
And even
though they may not have a business that's Pinterest friendly.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of times people hear from their peers and their colleagues that, you know, you need to have a business blog. You need to be on Pinterest. You need to be on Facebook. And so that's what they do. You'll go to a website and you'll see six different social media channels. And
each with one post.
Exactly. Each with one post in the last, you know, 3 weeks. So then they wonder why they're not getting any business from their Facebook fans, why nobody on Pinterest is converting into a customer. And so what I like to do is pull them back a little bit. Start from the very beginning, have them revisit, you know, really what differentiates them, who their market is, what their message is, and start there. And then start building a strategy, looking at their business, figuring out where they really should be spending their energy and their time. Because a lot of times it's not where they are currently spending it.
So how do you figure out where they should be spending it? Like, I mean, where do you look first?
It really comes down to the business. who their market is, who their target audience is, because depending on who your audience is, they're going to be living in different areas. You know, mm-hmm. they might like to consume information in the form of video, so they might spend a lot of their time on YouTube and places like that. They might be readers, and they go around through blogs. There might be specific blogs that they frequent, and you want to make sure that you're present on those blogs. So it really boils down
to... So how do you figure that out? How do you know what blogs you're...
You research.
You just Google blogs my customers look at.
Well, one first place to start is look at the competition. Kind of take a look at the landscape and see what's out there, what people are already doing. There's also a lot of tools that you can use to identify what we call influencers. So in a specific industry, there's typically a group of people who rise to the top as influencers who have a specific amount of influence, of clout, of experience, who talk about the topic, who have large followers. Take a look at them, see what they're talking about, and you can kind of get an idea as to where you should be spending your time and energy.
So with your skills and with your energy, you probably could have gotten a real job, or maybe you had a real job at one point. I mean, what was the catalyst? What sparked you to go into business for yourself? And are you sorry you did?
Man, that's a great question. It was really two things. So I was working for another company here in Atlanta, and I was just kind of unhappy.
A marketing company or just the?
It was a
digital marketing girl. You broke it up.
It was another marketing company, and I just, you know, it boiled down to me not liking working for somebody. I went to a meet with a potential client, mm-hmm. and this client was an entrepreneur. He was starting up his business, and after our meeting, he said to me, "Man, you know, Matthew, one of the best things I like about being an entrepreneur is I don't have to wear a tie to work." And I was like, "Oh man." You know, that's true.
Your business card has a tie on it. You know?
I chose to wear that one. But what he meant was, you know, he gets to choose, you know, how he runs his business, choose his day and everything like that.
And that resonated with you?
It resonated. And I went home, I marinated on it a little bit. And, you know, I had read earlier somewhere the question, what would you do if you weren't afraid? And so I really thought about that. What would I do if I wasn't afraid? And I said, well, shoot, if I wasn't afraid, I'd just start my own business.
Right.
And the next day I resigned from my position.
You just jumped off the cliff. No plan. All this planning and stuff you do for your clients.
That's other people.
You just went off. I love it.
It was a move I had to make, and it was the best move that I've made. This was early last year. And so, yeah, I walked in, said, you know, this isn't working for me. And, I started Digital Marketing Guy the next day.
So tell us a little bit about hobbies, passions, other interests, or are you just so buried in what you're doing that it's all related to the digital marketing?
Well, I'm a big believer in balance. I think that, you know, the gentlemen sitting across from me are entrepreneurs, and they know that it's easy to get swallowed up in what you're doing. And if you don't have some sort of balance, then, you know, you might hit a breaking point at some point. One of the things I just got into is I'm coaching soccer. I'm coaching a soccer team up in Roswell, and it's allowing me to get back to a sport that I loved playing as a kid, mm-hmm. And also giving back to people, which is something that I'm passionate about. I also love spending time with my family. My mom lives here in Atlanta, and you know, just spending time with quality people and building those relationships.
Now, was your family supportive when you said you're going to go out on your own and not get a traditional job?
Completely. I think they could see that I wasn't really enjoying the job that I was in, and they probably felt some of the, you know, some of the negatives from it, mm-hmm. Saw the stress in me, and so they completely supported the choice.
Now, what's been the hardest part of you of taking this entrepreneurial plunge? What's your biggest challenge?
You know, not knowing what to do, you know, not having the blueprint, like go step A, B, and C, and you'll find success. Having to 100% rely on myself, and or feeling that way, and you know, doing it alone sometimes is rough. I'm used to working with people, and I like working with a group of people. So doing it alone has been a challenge, but I've learned a heck of a lot about myself. I've learned a lot from the industry. And I've actually made some amazing connections with people because, you know, I didn't want to do it alone. I wanted to reach out to folks.
Right.
And now I have this amazing network of people around me who I can lean on for all sorts of different things.
So now if you happen to outpunch your coverage in a sales capacity and you're jumping up and down, you're really excited going back to the parking lot and you go, oh, my gosh, I can't really do all this. I need coders, I need graphic arts people, I need whatever, then you've started to build a network of...
Exactly.
Right, because that's what your clients are buying, right?
Right?
They're buying you, but also your network.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're buying my experience, they're buying my failures, they're buying my knowledge, they're buying access to my network, just mm-hmm. like you said as well.
And then what do your typical clients look like?
So my typical clients are, they're entrepreneurs. They are people who have identified some sort of passion and they want to take the step to break away from their 9-to-5. They want to start their own business. Some of mm-hmm. them have been, entrepreneurs for a couple of years. They're running into roadblocks, though. They're hitting those pain points. They're feeling those pain points. And they're starting to question whether or not they want to continue down this entrepreneurial path. And that's where I like to come in and say, okay, well, let's look at what you're doing marketing-wise. Because really what I want to help you do is I want to help you, the entrepreneur, rediscover why you started doing this in the first place. And I do that through coaching them on, proper marketing strategies, proper marketing processes to help alleviate some of those pain points.
But if you discovered, you should be on Twitter and LinkedIn, do you take that over on their behalf, or you just give them the tools and say, here, you should be on Twitter, go ahead and do that.
And here's the Twitter guy.
Right.
Sometimes do that, right?
Yeah, like, I do.
The best Twitter guy, the best in class Twitter guy. Seriously, right?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it really depends on the relationship. It depends on the business. Sometimes they have the resources to do it in-house, and that's totally fine. I like coaching teams. Mm-hmm. I think that teams can be a lot more effective than individuals. So if I'm working with a client and they have one or two people who can execute their marketing, then what I'll do is I'll help develop the strategy.
Right.
I'll help put the process in place, and I'll coach their team to execute. Otherwise, if they need me to do it, then I have people and I have resources in place to execute for them.
Okay, but I don't want to skim over this because I'm concerned that maybe Lee's representation of digital marketing might be a little bit narrow. I mean, I understand it includes social media, but it's more than social media, right?
It is.
So, let's get a good operational definition or working definition of digital marketing so that we can expand our view of it a little bit.
I mean, I view digital marketing as activities to help gain exposure online. I mean, that's a pretty broad definition, but underneath that umbrella include things like social media, include things like blogging, include pay-per-click advertising, include digital PR. So there's a whole lot of things that fall under that umbrella.
Okay, and some of the objectives of the online exposure may be very well to have someone show up at my door at my brick-and-mortar store, too.
Exactly.
Right? I don't just want to bounce them back and forth between the Twitter and the Facebook and all that, right?
I mean, Twitter and Facebook and SEO and everything, those are all tactics and they're methods that are trying to achieve some sort of goal. So, again, it depends on the business. If your goal is to get people in the door, you can absolutely use digital marketing to do that. If your goal is to get people to sign up for your service online, you can use digital marketing there as well. So it depends on your business, but ultimately you can use digital marketing and digital marketing strategies to help grow your business.
All right, so highly consultative. Sounds like a remarkably high-touch, pretty deep relationship sort of business in spite
Definitely.
Of the fact that so much of it is gigaboogies, the bites and all and all that stuff. So how does the sales and marketing thing work? Are you out there, you got your own little Jim Jammy automatic marketing program, or do you go old school analog and knock on doors? How does the sales and marketing thing for you work?
A lot of it comes down to two things, my network and doing an awesome job for my clients. When I started this, I had the goal of not wanting to spend any money on my own marketing. I wanted all my new clients to come from referrals. That was my goal. So if I do an outstanding job with client one, I say, hey, listen, and this is might be in the contract. If I do a great job for you, if I exceed your expectations, I'd like for you to give me two referrals. And that's how I've been growing
nice.
My business.
It's right into contract.
See,
like
that good work is a good business development tool. That's the lesson there.
No kidding. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So before we wrap, a little bit about what's next. What's the next thing you're going to put your energy and effort on? You want to expand the business? You want to get out of it and grow more people to do it so you can go fishing?
I get a lot of fulfillment and meaning out of the work that I do. I really love working with entrepreneurs, so I want to continue that in some capacity. But I want to also work on, and I am working on, some physical products to sell. And I'm actually working on a book right now as well. So I think I want to expand and kind of take the information and the knowledge that I have and try to reach a wider audience with it through things like books and products. So that's what I'm currently working on.
Do you do that in bars too? You just kind of throw that little thing out there? You're working on a book. We don't have time to go into it today, but we got to have you come back and talk about the book. But I'm going to ask you real quick, just a quick overview. What are you going to write a book about?
This book, the first one I'm working on, is it centers around the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. That was a book that I read, and I thought, this is a great book, but I don't know if it applies to me. So the book that I'm writing right now is kind of my journey to applying, learning from, and spreading that knowledge of others from the 7 Habits.
All right. So we're going to have you back. All right. When you get a little closer to releasing that thing, we'll have you back. Maybe come back with a client, talk about how you apply that stuff.
That would be wonderful.
Exciting stuff. Well, thanks so much for coming and visiting
with us, man. Thank you. I really enjoyed this a lot.
So let's make sure that our listeners have some contact information so they can reach out and have a conversation with you. And what I'm operating under the impression, you sit down and kind of have a this planning conversation with them before. You don't just send them a rate sheet. You know, here's my digital marketing rate sheet, right?
We talked before.
Yeah, so if they want to have that conversation, where can they reach you?
So the website is thedigitalmarketingguy.com, and you can reach me at matthew@thedigitalmarketingguy.com.
All right. Hey, listen, you going to hang out with us a little bit while we visit with our other guests?
I will. I'm here.
Okay, next up on Atlanta Technology Leaders, we have with us co-founder of Tix Same Day, Mr. Paul Lazon. Welcome to the show, man.
Hello, thank you.
So what'd you learn in that last segment, other than you got another book you put on your list that to buy in the spring maybe or something?
Oh, some interesting stuff there. Definitely want to maybe possibly have some conversations with Matthew after the show about how you can help us out with our company.
Well, I'll tell you what, intriguing name. I certainly all over the idea. Can I really get tickets the same day? Is that what this is about?
So yeah.
So I just call you, or is there a website too?
It's an app. There's a native iOS and Android app. We are in beta test, so it's live, but you can download it. And we've gone over the past year to 2 years to different markets and different festivals and different concerts and different sporting events to test certain groups and certain personas and whatnot on how to interact with the app, what the app can do, do you like it, do you not like it, just trying to get it to a point to where we could actually launch it.
Now, where did the idea come from?
So my friends and I, which one of them, Thomas Howard, the co-founder, and then Brandon Richardson and Daniel Kaplan, were all sitting around. We're huge football fans, you know, Georgia Tech, Georgia fan, Alabama, Auburn fans. We all go to football games. The issue going is we're always last minute. We always have either too many tickets or too few tickets. We have, and we love the tailgate. So we get to the tailgate. Last thing we want to do is, you know, go looking for other people to buy our tickets or go looking to sell our tickets. We want to enjoy the tailgate. So we're sitting around the tailgate one day and we thought, what if there was an app that we could geolocate people that were around us that are willing to buy tickets?
That are on site right now.
That are on site right now.
And they could be literally next to you and you wouldn't even know, right?
Right.
They could be sitting in the chair right next to me and I couldn't even know it. So yeah, so we kind of took the StubHub model, Craigslist model, and really where StubHub cuts off, which is 4 to 6 hours prior to any event, we pick up. So there's really, you know, in terms of competition out there and a solution out there, there's no one really that takes control of that 4 to 6 hours prior to an event because there's tons and tons and tons of unsold inventory at that point. Either, you know, you have too many tickets, you can't get rid of them, or you just waited until the last minute and you really want to go to a show or a concert or a sporting event and you just can't find the tickets. So this enables what we're doing is just how Uber introduced, you know, the rider and the driver. We're trying to connect the last minute ticket seller and buyer.
So you mentioned being in beta. You're testing it. So I'm trying to figure out what could go wrong. Is that the software could all come crumbling around your knees? Or what are some of the things that might go wrong and things that you're trying to make sure that you have right before you go really big and wide?
So, you know, I come at it from a design and UI standpoint. You know, I've been a producer, a digital producer for 14 years now, working with different designers and developers all across Atlanta and the Southeast and at different agencies. And so to me, a user experience, an ideal user experience, the quickest way to an action item or do something is what I want to achieve. So that's what
you got to make it easy for a 50-year-old middle-aged guy like Lee here on there and get his tickets, right? Because you don't want to have to hand that to the – yeah.
Absolutely, because there's different types of people out there, and different people, you know, interact with their smartphones in different ways. So you have to just, you know, you can't make it, you know, too intense. You can't make it too easy. You just have to make it simple for everyone.
Now, are you going to address any of the kind of the fear factor in this? Like, it Uber helps me get over some maybe fear that I would have by having a picture of the guy that I see okay, this is the guy that's supposed to be here. It's not some random person that's showing up. I feel like at least they've been vetted somewhat. Are you addressing that at all?
Absolutely. So that's kind of what we've learned in our testing and what the next release is going to be. So there's going to be a rating system. Of course, you're going to be able to attach pictures. We do, you know, some of our users do like the anonymity of it to where you don't have to exchange a picture or a phone number. So that's what the in-app messaging is for. But yeah, exactly. You can take a picture yourself. But it's just like, you know, you're walking down the street and you see a guy holding up, you know, two tickets. You're going to go up and you're going to introduce yourself to him. But where we, you know, come into play for security.
You put a little badge if they're a policeman.
Sure. We can do that, but we're going to have, you know, third-party integration with escrow. So we're going to actually be able to validate the ticket. So a lot of the times, you know, what I've run into personally, when I buy tickets to either a Hawks game or, you know, a Falcons game, I've run across invalid tickets. Someone's gone in and already pre-scanned the ticket, come back out, and then I buy a bogus ticket, which it doesn't matter. It happens with scalping. It happens with this app. It happens with StubHub. It happens with everyone.
At least you won't be out the money. You still won't be able to get your seat. You have to go find you another guy, but you won't be out the money because of your escrow system. Now, that's
so is that how it works now? That's why they scan your ticket? So that's like you can't use it anymore?
Well, we're So it depends on what kind of, you know, ticketing system the venue has. You know, some people are still, you know, good old paper ticket and they scan it. Some people have, you know, you come up with your phone and you scan it. It depends what kind of system they have. So we're looking at different, you know, integration points and third parties to work with and see how we can kind of solve that pain point, really offer a secure option. So, you know, there's going to be three options. The first option, simple cash-to-cash transaction. I trust you. You're a good guy. You're a good girl. I think this ticket is valid. Cash to cash, no transaction fee. Second option is going to be credit card. So, you know, you don't want to go around a football game with, you know, $500 in your pocket or run into the ATM trying to, you know, get out cash at the last minute. So we're going to be able to offer users to pay with your credit card. And then the third option is going to, of course, be escrow. So if you, you know, you look at the guy like, it might be a fake ticket, you'll be able to use an escrow. And, of course, there'll be a little service charge. But whereas StubHub is, you know, 18%+, we're still going to keep ours half of that.
Well, it's worth it to me because here, you know, maybe I've got a family of four and I'm going to buy these tickets. It's the money a little bit, but it's also I don't want to walk the family of four all the way up to the stadium. Then the tickets don't work. And my friends from out of town and they're sweating and all that kind of stuff. So that would be important to me. Now, what do you need and want more of? Do you need or want funding, marketing? Do you need more guys in the back room drinking grape knee-high and eating Cheetos and writing code? What do you need and want more of right now?
So we got a great team together. We have a design team, a development team, a marketing team in place. What we need and what we're looking for right now is capital, essentially, because we need to get the word out. We think it's going to grow organically. We've put together a student organization at each SEC and ACC school, which we're going to try to launch.
Like kind of a street team that they're going out there?
A street team, yeah. So they'll be able to, you know, earn credits. We've been working with different, you know, business professors and get them up and running. So in exchange for school credits. And then, of course, the end goal, you know, at the end, once they graduate, hopefully they come work for us or something like that. So we really want to kind of concentrate around, you know, the collegiate football atmosphere, let it grow from there into baseball, then into concerts, because, you know, someone that goes to a collegiate football game also will probably go to another sporting event, will also try to go to a festival or a concert. So I think it'll just organically grow. But, yeah, I think, you know, right now the chunk of what we need is we need to make some updates to, you know, the Android app and the iOS app, and then, of course, marketing and just getting users. We need to acquire users and get the momentum going and get the inventory in there.
Now, when you were first starting this, what were you doing to kind of see if this was a viable idea? Were you going to competitions? Were you doing pitching, you know, the kind of the speed pitching thing, or what were you doing?
We were, yeah. I mean, pretty much everything you just named, we started off and we'd just go from tailgate to tailgate kind of with, I had, you know, just concept sketches, and then I put together a little just design on a demo, and I'd go to different people at tailgates and say, hey, would this work? Would this you be interested in this? And then I went to different investors and I said, you know, is this a viable idea? Here's kind of a high-level business plan. Do you think this would work? And, you know, we got a lot of head nodding. So I think people have been kind of saying yes and yes and yes, and we're kind of at this pinnacle now where it's, you know, it's a viable product. It's out there. It works. People want to use it. So I think we just got to figure out how to get to the next step.
Right. So you need that kind of groundswell of users to really put it through the paces in order to see if this really is viable in the marketplace.
True. Yeah, we do. And, you know, another way we've been kind of looking at approaching this is maybe working with different local brokerage firms in town and making this as an extension.
Like local ticket broker. So that don't look at your competition as competition, look at them as partners.
There you go.
Exactly.
Because most of them are, they're set up for doing it well ahead of time. And like you said, they cut off 4 to 6 hours.
Well, too.
It's just a natural extension.
And a lot of them are, you know, pre-buying inventory, and they're sending down a team, let's say, to, you know, Phillips Arena.
Right, to unload the 20 tickets.
To unload the 20 tickets they have. Right. So instead of sending 10 guys, they could send one guy with a phone.
With an app. And know exactly who wants to buy.
Bingo. Uh-huh.
Less time.
Very cool. Very cool. All right, so I don't know. Is it too early to have folks reach out and contact you to learn more? This is
not at all.
Do you need beta testers for the app, or it's out there in the wild?
No, absolutely. We're we're going to be doing different events here and there, and we have people reach out, and you know, we reach out to others. So yeah, anyone interested in helping or learning more, you know, you can just go to the website, which is ticksameday.com. That's TIXSAMEDAY.com. Or you can just shoot me an email directly at paul@ticksameday.com.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in, man.
Thank you guys for having me.
And same thing. I think as you get a little further along, it would be nice to kind of get an update on what's going on. And
would love to.
Yeah, and who knows? We may see you at some of these kind of startup-oriented capital.
Right.
We hang out with that crowd a lot. I mean,
right. We do a lot of events, Startup Riot, Startup Lounge, those kind of things. Have you showed up over there?
I have, and I'm going to start going more and more. We just actually pitched at the TechCrunch event down at the Fox.
So that was great. Nice.
Yeah, that was a really fun event. And, you know, we're starting to get invited to different things, and I think people are starting to understand what we're trying to do. And the interest is out there, and the ball is rolling. So, yeah, I'll be anywhere and everywhere. So.
Fantastic. All right. Hang with us. We got one more guest we're going to visit with this
afternoon.
All right. Next up, last up, the headliner, Lee. We've been waiting all afternoon for this guy. He's been very patient, and I'm sure he has a great deal to offer. Co-founder with Project Locker. Please join me in welcoming to the show Mr. Corrigan Brown. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks. Hi.
You know, there are not a lot of folks named Stone out there in the marketplace. I suspect there may be even fewer named Corrigan. That is a pretty cool name. That's a good stage name.
Thank you. I think that I may be the only Corrigan Brown on Earth. There are other Corrigans, and there are certainly other Browns.
That's fantastic. Project Locker, that's kind of a cool name as well. Mission, purpose, what are you out there trying to do for folks?
So Project Locker is cloud services for developers. What we do, if you think about the software development lifecycle, we focus on the development and release process. So we offer source control, a place to put your source code. We offer issue tracking, a place to keep track of bugs and features. And we also offer remote deployment, get your code out into a staging server and test it out and play with it. We're working on build services as well. We're about to launch that where you can actually have your tests run and have that code built and make sure that your build is ready to go before you put it in production. And we view ourselves as a hub in the ecosystem, not necessarily a do-it-all player. So the areas of the software development lifecycle that we don't cover, we try to connect with partners that can. So we're integrated to players like Basecamp, Pivotal Tracker, and we have a bunch of exciting integrations coming up in the next few months.
Now, you mentioned being a hub. Isn't there another hub in this space?
There is. A company called GitHub. So GitHub has been around not quite as long as us. We've been around since 2003. I think they came around in about 2008. The main thing that we like to tell people is Git is not GitHub. The masterstroke they did in their marketing, I think you'll appreciate that, Matthew, is that they managed to kind of get people to conflate Git and GitHub. So we do offer Git hosting for businesses. GitHub is focused more on open source.
And how did you get started in all this?
It's actually a kind of funny story. My business partner and I, Renako Godfrey, he and I were basically operating a consulting co-op. We both had backgrounds in enterprise software. We were out doing consulting, and we were trying to come up with some ideas for products as well. So we were working on some products, and we were hosting code out of his house on a CVSNT server. and that probably sounds familiar to a lot of developers even today. And the server crashed, as CVSNT servers do.
Right.
And we lost about a month of work. We were very disappointed, and we just like, this sucks. Why did this happen? And is there a better way? And we took a look around. There were a couple people hinting at services like a hosting service, but it wasn't really popular. Cloud wasn't really a thing yet. Internet connections weren't fast. People didn't trust the cloud. You know, people view source code as a precious, precious commodity. So we decided to put Project Locker together, launch that. We started with CVS and Scarab, which was an issue tracking system, and we've since kind of added some of the more modern ones, Subversion, Git, Track, that kind of thing.
So now how's it being, how's the marketplace? Are they liking it? What stage are you at?
We are fairly mature. We think there's a lot of growing to do. The marketplace has a pretty low penetration, I would say, even with the player, even with the big players in the space. I would say we're in the top tier providers. You know, we have a six-figure number of users in 110 countries, and so we're doing pretty well. But there are millions of developers that are still copying files back and forth, and people in developer adjacent fields like designers. You know, you've probably seen that, Paul. It's like, hey, I need a new version of my product, and I'm just going to copy the file and name it 204 instead of 203, and that's my revision control. And that's difficult to manage. It's difficult to go back in time.
But so, how do you explain the value that you provide to them?
How do we explain the value?
Well, obviously, they're choosing not to use your service. They're choosing to kind of do it that way where they're just renaming the file. So they must think that's good enough.
Sure. So what we try to explain to people is the what-if scenarios. So there are a few what-if scenarios. What if you release a bad version and you need to go back in time? Like, so going back one version, not such a big deal. Going back 15 mm-hmm. versions, you realize you lost your way 2 weeks ago. How do you find that again?
Right.
So a service like Project Locker helps you understand who's doing what and what's going wrong. I mean, that's another thing. Which developers are doing which things? So if you have a rogue developer or perhaps a developer that just needs some guidance and they're doing the wrong things, you can start to trace where they're introducing defects into your code. There are basic things like disaster recovery, right? Your server, if your server that's got the 204 and 203 folders on it, are you backing that up? Are you keeping track of that? How fast can you restore it? Our kind of pithy pitch is safe, secure, accessible. We make sure that your code is accessible over the internet, over secure channels. We make sure that it's backed up, and we make sure you can get to it via wherever you are.
So I want to know how conscious was the decision to do all this, and thank you for doing it, but to do all this here in Atlanta instead of the Valley?
We're Atlanta homegrown. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And, you know, the Valley is not being in the Valley, as my fellow co-founders here can attest, there are some challenges with respect to capital. There are some challenges with respect to the energy in the room, kind of the energy in the city. Mm-hmm. That is changing. I think companies like MailChimp, the work that David Cummings has done since he successfully sold Pardot with Tech Village, the ATDC. There's Startup Riot. Sanjay Parekh has done some amazing things with that. I love Startup Riot. And so I think that energy is really starting to build some momentum, and we're starting to see a critical mass form in Atlanta. But, of course, that wasn't here 10 years ago, or even 5 years ago. It was a lot weaker than it is now.
Now, did you have the opportunity to go to the Valley and you chose to stay here, or do you have funding from some people from the Valley? Or
We do not.
Are you self-funded or you have investors?
We're bootstrapped. So we started here because we started here because that's what we know, and
right.
That's what we decided to stick with.
So what's the next mile look like, the near-term horizon for you guys? You're going to start up other organizations? You're going to continue to grow this one?
What we want to do is redouble our efforts to serve larger businesses. Mm-hmm. I think that very small teams, I think startups get our value. I think some teams, fairly small development teams within larger companies that aren't necessarily software companies, but that mm-hmm. have software as a critical part of their business, they get our value. So we want to basically tell a better story to the enterprise and explain to them, hey, you can benefit from the cloud too. You don't have to set up a whole IT shop and a server farm. You can use our service and focus those resources where they can better be used.
Now, do you have any enterprise clients that are using it that way?
We have a few. There is a large electric company. They actually build software for like power transformers and things like that. Mm-hmm. There is a marketing and forecasting company that's pretty large that uses our software. So we do have a few enterprise players. No marquee names that I think I am authorized to say.
And you probably have a real affinity for the smaller outfits and the startups because of what you've been through. But is it practical? I mean, do startups need this service? I guess maybe the answer might be sometimes,
well, I'm
right?
Sure. They all need it, right?
Of course. Everybody needs it. Everybody needs it. My mom needs it.
At least the retainer version, right? Like the annual maintenance version.
Yeah. I mean, startups have different needs. I mean, startups don't have anything, right? So with enterprises, you're looking at ways to save money. Right. With startups, you're looking at ways to be able to move quicker, to be more nimble, right? Paul's dealing with this with his team. You know, they're using some kind of source control. We actually didn't get a chance to discuss it, I'm sure. And what, you know, that allows his team to be more nimble, to do releases quicker and to keep track of defects and fix those defects quicker so he can get from beta to GA much quicker.
But don't you find that larger companies, they pay more for painkillers than vitamins?
I like that. Write that down, Mike.
That's a good point. I would say that this is both a painkiller and a vitamin. I mean, the problems that larger companies are facing are they've got old systems deployed. They've got proprietary systems that are difficult to use. I worked with a client. And they're released to production. I mean, they're doing 9 figures of business a year on the web, and their release to production system is proprietary system. I won't name it because I don't want to make them angry with me. But it was a proprietary system. It's very difficult to use, barely scaled beyond 2 gigs of source code stored. You spent lots of time doing things like rebuilding the database and all that kind of stuff. And so,
and they've just accepted this, right?
Yeah, they've accepted that that's the way things have to be.
Right.
Build needs to take hours and it needs to be difficult. I need to take days to set up my team. That pain, I think you get used to that pain, you know, just like any chronic pain. But when you show someone that there's another way, I think they're receptive to that.
So has your job and responsibility migrated more toward the spokesperson, the sales and marketing guy out there being the evangelist, or do you still have quite a bit of technical and operational responsibility? How have you chosen to let that unfold?
Well, because our business is so critical around the technical function, I still do a lot of the technical work. So, some of that code has my name on it still.
And we could track it to see which
but
is your code.
Yes. Yeah, but you don't have permissions because we've secured it.
But you're wearing both hats, though.
Yes. And so I get out and I evangelize. I'm a mentor with the Founder Institute in Atlanta, which is another part of that critical mass that's forming. They're doing some amazing work.
So what's that? I'm not familiar with that.
The Founder Institute is a group that is teaching people who want to do startups everything about startups. So they're doing pitches, from pitches to incorporation and beyond, and they're walking them through an intensive program. And these people may already have day jobs or they may already be students, but they're committing to spend 10 or 15 hours a week on their startup and build that out and turn that into, when they graduate, it's a viable startup. So it's something like an incubator, something like a coaching process. And the directors, Praveen Ganta and Prem Bhatia, are local startup guys themselves, and they've done amazing work.
Would you be open to coming back and maybe talking about that?
I would. I definitely think if we do that, we should bring one of those guys
as
well. Yeah, I'd love to.
Because I wasn't familiar with it, and I think it's important to get the word out about it.
Yeah, it's brand new, just last couple of months. So that might be why you haven't heard of it.
So you don't actually have gray hair. I know our listeners can't see that. But you do have an air of maturity and probably a little scar tissue. So I'd like to wrap the segment, if we could.
Sure.
With what counsel, what advice, if any, you would have for the folks out there that are listening. They've got an idea. They've gotten a little bit of traction. And now it's time to bear down and either bootstrap, go after money, decide if they're going to be the technical hat or they're going to be the sales and marketing guy. Just some life lessons learned having built the business to this point that you might share with them that might save them a little pain and heartache.
Sure. I would say especially if you're a technical co-founder, that was one of the challenges we faced. Technical people like to automate things and make processes that will scale. And, you know, I want to make sure that when a million users come in,
you're ready.
I'm ready.
And you have two users.
Exactly. Exactly. So I would say be comfortable building something that will work for right now. If you put your customer first, if you are passionate about serving that customer and stay focused on making sure the customer experience is gold, don't be afraid to get on the phone with them. Don't be afraid to email them. Do whatever it takes to retain and understand that customer. Everything else will follow. The best problem you can have is there's so many people coming in, my website is crashing. I don't know what to do.
Right.
You can fix that problem pretty easily. You can get the band of coders guys in or something to fix that for you. But you can't fix angry customers.
Or no visits.
Or no visits.
Good stuff. Now, if somebody wanted to learn more, website for you guys?
Yeah, we're at projectlocker.com. And I'm at cgbrown@projectlocker.com, and our Twitter's projectlockerhq.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Lee Cantor for Stone Payton and our good friends at Bandicoder who make this possible. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Technology Leaders.
Atlanta Technology Leaders is brought to you by Band of Coders. Band of Coders is a company of talented software developers who energize clients' projects and their development teams.